No, and even more when, I mean, I can, when you have an event in Azerbaijan, you get the real sense that everybody in the room is already friends. The amount, and especially with the level of conversation and who I see around here, I know that Azerbaijan and our guest today need no major introduction, but I just do want to point out that more than its immediate neighbors, I would say Azerbaijan is a country that whose significance varies depending on which element of the country's development you're interested in. Those who are interested in energy development, for those individuals, Azerbaijan means one thing. Those who are interested in issues of regional security, non-proliferation, Azerbaijan means something else. Ethnic conflict, political development, the role of religion in society. Azerbaijan is the kind of country that brings together individuals with many different interests to examine them in a very interesting arena. And the convergence of so many different elements of development are really matched by the importance and delicacy of Azerbaijan's multiple foreign relations, including with, to name the most significant actors, Russia, Iran, Turkey, and the United States, and Europe. And I would suggest that Azerbaijan's regional significance has been emphasized in numerous ways just in recent weeks. Efforts to resolve the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, stepped up discussion regarding Azerbaijan's role not only as a supplier of energy, but as a transit hub for energy supplies from across the Caspian, U.S.-Azerbaijani maritime and other forms of security cooperation, and Azerbaijan's potential role in the diplomatic triangle of Iran, Russia, and the West. Our speaker today is Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs of Azerbaijan, Aras Azimov. Ambassador Azimov has served as Deputy Foreign Minister since 1994, and he is naturally well-versed in the complexities of Azerbaijan's foreign and security policy. Prior to his appointment as Deputy Minister, he served in various positions in Azerbaijan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He was born in Baku, graduated from the School of Oriental Studies at Azerbaijan State University, and he speaks Azerbaijani, Turkish, Russian, English, and Persian, but I believe he'll be addressing us in English this afternoon. Ambassador Azimov, we thank you for coming. Please, the mic is yours. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate this very warm welcome, and such a great audience, such a great gathering today at an institution whose name and authority does not need to be commented. I think that behind all these expressions which our distinguished chairman has used trying to qualify the importance of Azerbaijan, there is one major quality, that Azerbaijan is a central country of a region which serves as a linkage, as a transit, as a bridge between East and West, between North and South, between Europe and Asia. And that is a merit. That is a challenge, that is an asset, and that is something which should be exploited, developed, further explored, and put on service for the nation and for other nations surrounding that. This is not my first time in the United States. Usually we have our annual regular dialogue with the U.S. government, run by MFA, Minister of Foreign Affairs, namely me, and by the State Department at the level of Assistant Secretary of State for Political and Military Affairs. The security dialogue has been established several years ago, and as I said, regularly we get together in Washington or in Baku, and we discuss a variety of issues in a wide range of questions and items united by the agenda of security. Security is, as I usually say, a multifaceted, complex notion, and therefore any issue which, in a way, has a linkage towards interests of security of state is being brought to this agenda. We are satisfied with the level of participation and engagement of the U.S. administration into the security affairs and policies in the region of South Caucasus, in the basin of the Caspian Sea, And generally, I must say that today my basic preoccupation was how to further develop this cooperation, how to increase its effectiveness, how to improve the understanding between, how to maintain the channels and to increase volumes and quality of exchange of information, and how to make practically effective those partnerships which have been developed so far during several, more than even 10 years of this relationship, which are being qualified as a strategic, as a strategic partnership, as joint commitments and mutually shared commitments towards security of Azerbaijan, security of the region, and of the Caspian Basin. I believe you all are in a way familiar with those issues which keep us busy in this dialogue. In a way, all those issues are interrelated, and many of you have dealt in different ways and capacities with the policy of Azerbaijan, with security concerns and risks. So I don't need, I believe, to further elaborate on what kind of major risks are on the table. You know that the country is located in a strategic place, a part of the world, which also has certain merits in terms of transit opportunities, in terms of rich natural resources, not only oil and gas. And the task which was in front of Azerbaijani leadership yet 12 years ago, in 1994, was exactly to move out from the quagmire of probably unsettled conflict, prolonged hostilities, exhausting resources, exhausting efforts and people, and to move on the path of stability, to move on the path of increased constructive work inside the country, to open up the resources and to exploit it and to bring American and other Western presences and provide presence of interest in the country and to develop further on the process which brought Azerbaijan today to the level where it is. So, plus to all those qualifications which we heard in introductory remarks, I think Azerbaijan today represents a stable, a developed, well-established, well-positioned country with great potential. At the same time, if we are going to rest on the laurels of the achievements, of course we shall be very soon challenged by those risks which should be addressed. So current achievements, achievements of Azerbaijan, which have been so far promoted with the help, with partnership assistance, with almost close presence of the United States and other partners in Euro-Atlantic community, will be challenged. And therefore, these achievements demand more and more efforts to be defended, to be further promoted. So these risks should be addressed. Dealing with those, we have to identify the character, which is not only regional or only national, but even more geopolitically charged than you can imagine. If we talk about conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia, it is not simply, or it is not majorly, ethnic conflict or clash between Armenians and Azerbaijanis. I believe not. I believe that there is a strong and heavy geopolitical charge. And I think that once these obstacles are removed from the way towards peaceful settlement, I think ethnic peace and stability will be established in the conflict zone, namely in the region of Nagorno-Karabakh. We discuss this issue with the United States, representatives of which are presented in the Minsk group. Ambassador Steve Mann is well known to you, probably. We are registering now activization of the role and efforts of the United States within the process of settlement. Probably you've heard that a recent meeting between President Aliyev and his counterpart from Armenia in Rambouillet in February did not give any result. But at the same time, that should not be implying any sense of pessimism. Actually, we should drop off such notions like pessimism or optimism. To be not naive in terms of expecting, overestimating or underestimating perspectives. On the other hand, we have to be pragmatically tuned. We have to be constructive. We have to be target-oriented. I'm not advertising Azerbaijani position, as I should, probably. But I must tell you that Azerbaijan's position has been, especially recently, has been well articulated by President Aliyev and by Minister of Foreign Affairs and by other officials. And that was recognized as increasingly constructive. What constructiveness means? It means a desire to solve a problem purified from any emotions, purified from any backmind political considerations. If there is a serious concern, concern should be addressed. If there is security risk, this risk should be taken care of in the sake of the interest of both communities. Both communities, and I will increasingly stress the importance of such an approach, which would envisage coexistence and peaceful coexistence and coordination and cooperation between two communities in the Inkay region. This is the only one way where we can find out an opportunity for peace. Inkay region should remain as a part of Azerbaijan as it was. Territorial integrity of Azerbaijan may not and should not be challenged. Alternative is a continued clash, continued idling tensions between parties with always hanged over Damocles sword of threat to be again engaged in a hostility. So my basic preoccupation today is to bring such an understanding inside negotiations that both parties should come to a common ground of understanding that once Armenia drops an extreme position on separation of Inkay region from Azerbaijan, and Azerbaijan will come to a constructive position on providing guarantees for both communities living in Inkay region inside Azerbaijan, I believe then we can be better off, we can be set for better prospect, better promotion of peace and better results in peaceful settlement. If in the end, finally, we shall have such a task of defining the status of Inkay region, probably that has to be done with both communities engaged. Based on an ethnic cleansing, with only one community and having the other one expelled and excluded and forgotten, obviously, no one can talk about democracy in this case. No one can judge on legitimacy of such a status. Obviously, to reach to that point, Azerbaijani community should be given an opportunity to return back. And if we unfold the process from its final natural conclusion backwards to the beginning, to the starting position, then we can build up logically intertwined consequential elements of the process of settlement, which shall bring us towards that situation when not subjectivity, not war emotions driven hostility based mistrust and confidence, but normality and objectivity, closeness of communities, coexistence ideas will rule. And when both communities will be able, together in the region, taste the actually product of the peaceful coexistence, then they shall be able to judge on what is in their real interest. Those who lived in the region should live there again. Any distortion of this position by the Armenian side probably will not be welcomed. We are not pretending to any territory of the other state. We are not occupying a territory of any other state. And of course, we shall not reconcile with the loss of territory of our state. On the other hand, of course, the existence of a community, of another national origin, Armenian community, in Azerbaijani territory represents a challenge for the government, a challenge for institutions, which should be ready, which should be compliant, which should be able to provide that level of standards in human rights, in providing freedoms, in guaranteeing security, social security, and whatever, citizen security for those people whom we pretend to name as citizens of Azerbaijan. And till that moment of confidence, of course, there is a winding and long and bumpy road of going through many difficult obstacles. And of course, we count on partnership of the United States in making that road as smooth as possible. Because till community can return back to NK, we shall need guarantees in place provided. Guarantees of legal, political, and practical level and quality. Those guarantees which will provide confidence of populations in security in a place where they're going to live. Territories surrounding NK should be evacuated, liberated, so what? Forces which occupy territories should be withdrawn and returned to their place of origin. I believe that formations which are currently established in NK outside of the framework of Armenian armed forces which are acting in Azerbaijan's territory will be also dealt within the norms and principles and standards. And of course, those illegal formations should be dissolved. On the other hand, the community will need security. And some measures like establishment of local police will be considered, and Azerbaijani government will be looking to an opportunity of discussing such an issue during next stages of the process of negotiations. Some other distortions of positions of Azerbaijan are somewhat aired by our Armenian colleagues, which I would like to dismiss now. One of such mythical accusations is that Azerbaijani government rejects to recognize Armenian party of Nagorno-Karabakh region and rejects to talk with them or rejects to engage in negotiations with them. Total false and wrong position. Not on the side of Azerbaijan, because Azerbaijan was one of those, and myself personally, I was part of that process since the very beginning, who considered as a normal possibility talking to their own people acting in this region. We cannot ignore their existence. We cannot ignore their binding position towards their own security. And we have to talk to them. That's obvious. And such a framework is provided through the Minsk group. And when time permits, when conditions are fitting, when task is needed, such a task will be implemented. We never reject it. But we were not very skillful in rejecting those assertions or those speculations, skillfully aired by the opposite side, increasing unexisting artificial value of what has been taken in a positional way, somewhat recognizing the other party. It is not a matter of recognition. It is not a matter of legalization. No one is going to legally recognize an authority of NK region before they are legally established. On the other hand, no one can reject cooperation and partnership within the NK region of Azerbaijan with those communities who are acting there. And whoever is elected as a leader of a community, till he becomes a legally established institution, he cannot be qualified as legal. On the other hand, he is inside, and he will be a point of contact. He will be a partner for cooperation. In other words, he will be functionally recognized. He will be addressed. He will be talked. He will be cooperated. And, of course, the same attitude should be demonstrated and considered with regard to our Azerbaijani community, which will return back to NK region. And probably a leader of such Azerbaijani community will be engaged in a coordination mechanism, which is not clear yet. We did not discuss it, but I think we can discuss that within the certain circumstances. And that coordination mechanism will engage both leaders of both communities, making them together partnering, cooperating, and also interacting with Azerbaijani government. The same way, we think that such a situation will bring us closer to a normality and objectivity. You can ask when such a thing can be done or will be feasible. Probably after territories surrounding NK are withdrawn and guarantees for security, also in practical way through deployment of peacekeeping forces, will be established. Such a guarantee will create more confidence of parties and will increase our level of ability of parties to cooperate. So, when territories are withdrawn and communications are restored, population will need to return back to territories, and rehabilitation of territories is a huge, complex operation which will engage many forces, both of military and civilian quality. And these civilian and military components also should be provided by international community. So the needs should be assessed, and an assessment of rehabilitation in these territories will be carried on before, of course, things will start to be implemented. So you see that there are a lot of issues on the table of negotiations. But currently, I would like to also use this opportunity and to make within the limits of confidentiality which is ruling negotiations within this very sensitive process of settlement, I can tell you that there are several major cornerstone issues which have to be addressed and settled in order to enable us to move forward. One of those is an issue of corridor. You all know, you've heard many times that our Armenian side is very preoccupied, is concerned with a link, as they say, between Armenia and NK region. We realize that there is such a concern. We understand that such a link for normal, secured, safe transportation in confidence for both people and cargo from Armenia to NK region shall be and should be provided. And this was always a part of negotiations, one of elements considered in the security agenda of this process. Also, the same concern does Azerbaijan have, and that deals with the link between Azerbaijan and the rest of Azerbaijan, which is in its Nakhichevani part, the Republic of Nakhichevan, separated, as you remember, by a map. I don't know. Is there any map? No. But you can, let's say, imagine that. So in this virtual map, you will see that there is a piece of land separated from Azerbaijan named Nakhichevan. And, of course, the conflict has disrupted normal link between these two parts of one single state. And our preoccupation also was linked with this corridor, with this link. negotiations could go for a long time on having discussions on, as I usually say, whose corridor is more corridorish, whose corridor is more wider or stronger or whatever, secured or whatever, feasible, and so on and so forth. Geography sometimes limits us. Sometimes distances are different. Sometimes terrain conditions are severe. And in case of a link between Azerbaijan and Nakhichevan, this is really a matter of concern. On the other hand, why should we spend our time fruitlessly discussing these two contradicting or compelling corridors when we could do actually a very simple thing? Let's make a link through one road for both sides. And this is rather constructive approach. This is one of those signs of constructiveness, which I told you earlier, as a quality of Azerbaijan's position. And that one single corridor linkage will take Azerbaijanis from Azerbaijan, both, and a bigger, larger part of Azerbaijan, and NK region, through Armenian territory, to Nakhichevan, the same way Armenians will use this corridor to get to NK region, in to their Armenian counterparts. And even Turkey, I don't know any Turkish representatives here, but we discussed this matter with Turkish government, and they also rendered their full support for such an approach, will be ready to use this road as a highway link between already three countries, getting inside through Nakhichevan, Armenia, back Azerbaijan and its NK region, and so on and so forth. So such a road, used by both sides, will make a very important service to the settlement process. It will play a role of confidence road. It will increase trade opportunities, and it will be more safer, more secured than any other opportunity. Because in this case, both parties are equally interested. No one will bum it, no one will block it. So this is one issue which could be addressed, and I believe this is only one, a rare opportunity where we could make a breakthrough in trying solving the issue of so-called corridor. And such a solution for this issue will, of course, ease the question of return of Lachin territory, or part of that, which was somewhat considered by Armenian side as a corridor. Another issue, which is also a subject of speculations, and I would like to dismiss somewhat around that, a floor around this issue, is increasingly heard speculations on Kelbajar region. Kelbajar region is one of regions surrounding NK. It's clear. No difference between Kelbajar, Lachin, Agdam, Fizuli, Jebrail, Zangilan, and Kubatli in terms of their status. All of those are parts of Azerbaijan. In terms of its geography, they might be different, but that doesn't matter. And in terms of its location, all those are surrounding NK region. So we don't see any reason to keep Kelbajar in a delayed standby position. The only one, let's say, motivation of the other side is to keep it as a hostage till somewhat better position is bargained for themselves. But this would rather increase, not decrease, nervousness. This would decrease, vice versa, opportunities for normal development of the process of settlement. This would increase emphasis of the Azerbaijani side on this particular region, and this would increase tensions inside the region itself. So hostage taking at any time is a convincingly bad thing to do, wrong matter. Particularly in terms of territory, this is more than wrong action. So I would ask the Armenian side to reconsider that position. And if there are any realistic and well-positioned security concerns and justified concerns, we are ready to address those. Because, as I told you, the plan is about peacekeeping deployment, and peacekeepers will be deployed in those areas which will be considered more sensitive. Specifically, such area as Kelbajar will be addressed, but there is no reason for keeping that. And also there is one consideration important to be put into Armenian ears, that six will not make seven at any chance. So if you plan to get for six the same something what Azerbaijan was ready to give for seven, this is wrong arithmetics. Six never makes seven. And issue number three, a lot of speculations around. I'm being asked at every corner, what about referendum? So I know such a mechanism, which is well developed in different countries and established in different ways. There are decisive referendums, there are consultative referendums, there are quarter-based referendums or country-wide referendums, there are after-law or pre-law referendums. All this does not matter. If we define a status, we have to define it. And a process of definition shall be a legal, not illegal, but a legal and a democratic one. And such a process, of course, may include votings. But if you think out what is going to happen in a region after ethnic cleansing, you would not need many efforts to guess that a manipulated voting of a single majority-based process for Armenian population in NK definitely will call for something what would be desired by Armenian leadership. And this does not have anything in common with democracy. Predictable, prejudgeable, prejudicial, and manipulated solution. Whereas, first of all, ethnic cleansing should be removed in terms of its consequences. They are to be eliminated. Azerbaijani community has to return back. And when real population of real local originality will be able to taste the real matters and real products of their peaceful coexistence, then we can count on legality and democracy. And voting will be considered as one of mechanisms to define the attitudes and approaches of local population. But we cannot take as granted somewhat is music for ears of Armenians now, referendum thing. It would be a deal killer now. So we have to make a process further on carried towards a normality and objectivity. This is about conflict. Sorry for being so long, but I think this was a rare opportunity when I could talk to such a distinguished and experienced and even sincerely interested and committed audience to the problems and to the issues which I was able so far with utmost sincerity, again, limited by confidentiality to put forward for you. Other issues on the table are somewhat limited with conflicts. Not only with conflict of NK region and around it, but also conflicts in Georgia, Abkhazian region, South Ossetian region. Maybe some other considerations will add to the spectrum of these factors which are interlinked and intertwined. But basically, as I said, conflicts are of geopolitical nature, and the same way of geopolitical nature are those processes of integration of the South Caucasus region. To where? To Euro-Atlantic area, to European continent, to European and Euro-Atlantic institutions. Generally, we used to call it European and Euro-Atlantic integration. It does not mean that Azerbaijan moves from its own eastern shell towards a western heaven. No. Azerbaijan continues to remain a bird of two wings, as I say. It is an eastern and it is a western. It is a part of Asia, part of Europe. And the matter is that we have of both assets and of both values, which are in a very, I would say, harmonical way absorbed by the society of Azerbaijan, enriched and mutually enriched. And so Azerbaijan has something to bring in into European portfolio of values. That makes me to remind you somewhat an initiative of Azerbaijan, which was unfortunately not supported in OSCE so far, an initiative which could give a rise to programs of education of Islamic values in European institutions and universities, possibly in a wider education system. And once such a program could be raised, maybe such scandals like Khartoum scandal could be handled in a more smoother way, or even the place for such conflicts or such disputes could be dried off at all. So the issue of Islamic values and European values in Azerbaijan is considered as one generic whole harmony. And this is very valuable consideration of those who know Azerbaijan, who visit Azerbaijan, and who take part of that with themselves in their memories, and even in their practices. Azerbaijani practical implementation of its commitments in Council of Europe or in OSCE or European Union or in NATO do have different qualities, of course. Different chronology, different schedule, different scales, and so on and so forth. Techniques are different. But the concept behind is one. The philosophy behind this thing is one, that this society wants to be a part of a whole Europe and wants to be enriching part of that, not only in terms of oil and gas, but also in terms of its values. And on the other hand, Azerbaijan as a moderate Islamic country, but at the same time as a society of multi-ethnic and multi-confessional character, being a host for all three major religions, being a motherland for many ethnic communities, being a cradle for many cultures, and civilizational layers in Azerbaijan are obviously seen in its architecture, in its literature, and etc. So beyond all this, we can further on take an opportunity which is open now within the 15 or 16 years of independence when Azerbaijan has embarked upon a new beginning of a new life, of a new stage in its rich history. And the philosophy is to take the best practice, to take best method, to engage into a successfully proven system of democratic development of institutions and solving problems within the package of international effort, building up indivisibility in your Atlantic area and providing these partnerships in a different ways. Coming closer to the issue of NATO, if I'm not yet at risk of exploiting your patience, I would like to talk about a bit most recent achievements. And those are obviously evident in consistent implementation by Azerbaijan of many programs taken under Partnership for Peace and individual Partnership Action Plan as further development or extension of PFP, was largely and heavily developed as a result of Azerbaijan's initiative, which several years ago raised an issue before NATO to make a bilateral nature of partnership more visible and more stronger and more robust. Because we believe that as PFP has been established as a way of kind of bridge between those non-NATO members and those who are members of NATO, with one end result to become eventually a member of NATO, this role exists in its own place. This is there where it is. Today we have 26 members of NATO vis-a-vis 16 just several years ago. I have participated in all these forums, and I have led talks with NATO when NATO was 16, and 16 plus 1 was one experience. But I led talks with NATO when NATO was already 19, and 19 plus 1 was a different experience. And I must tell you, 26 plus 1 is a totally different thing. NATO is more and more a political union of countries which are united by commitments and by values, on one hand. On the other hand, NATO is an institution with growing challenges. Geography is enlarged. Distance are extended. Tasks are increased. NATO is going globally, some people say. But at least NATO today is in Afghanistan, is in Darfur, in Iraq, in other places, in the Balkans, it was and still is. And further to come, some people say. So how NATO is going to implement all these things, one can ask. And what is about perspectives of political unanimity? And the union has been shaken several times, very severely. And that, speaking in this friendly atmosphere, a bit out of my official clothings and capacities, I must tell you that we always are following with certain sense of concern the issues of this kind. The events of March of 2003, when everyone around was speaking about falling apart of NATO community because of obvious rejection by one side to support another side. And that kind of things may repeat again, or if not, thanks God. But we cannot rely every time on such notions. We have to be cautious about and interoperability, political unanimity, and legal solemnity and robustness of NATO community is something desired by Azerbaijan, although Azerbaijan is only a partner. A partner which is active, a partner which is committed, a partner which is engaged. We are actively contributing to Iraq, although Iraq is not directly NATO's responsibility. We are in Kosovo since the very beginning of the operation in 1999. We are in Afghanistan since the very first months of that story. And it's not an issue to, you know, to get another pin of recognition and saying how good I am telling this to you and maybe you will applaud me for that. No. The question is of concern. How far, how effective, how strong? And there is an issue of stretch of capability. Stretch capability of NATO along and within the certain distances and regions. And that, of course, is an issue of also confidence in your partner. Because the day we rely on someone, we want to be confident. And it does not mean that I have a courage of questioning or somewhat doubting. No. It's not a question of benefit of the doubt here. It's a question of sincere interest of myself to make NATO stronger and to make NATO more deliverable in such places where expectations are high. And sometimes expectations, once are not justified, would then create a crisis of deliverability. And this is not something desired by Azerbaijan. Therefore, within the current transformation of NATO, keeping a door open for new members. But that door is also geopolitically somewhat overloaded with many, many considerations which will rather limit possible calculations of some countries for potential membership in foreseeable future. Maybe some heavy changes in geopolitical environment will be demanded. Maybe some crisis and potential crisis will come around. But still, membership is an option for many who desire that. But also support by society is important. But when society supports that, it is important to look into issues of reasonability of that support. Sometimes a society is simply a desperate one. It is simply desperately caught and suppressed and weak, and the only one panacea is considered and is suggested for this society. And this will be taken forward, and then God, what will happen in case of thing is not delivered? How society will tolerate and how to risk the attitude to such a really important and really dear image of a NATO, of a club of strong countries. So My point is, in this long speculation, about making other institutions relevantly and equally developed together with continued optionability of membership, to have a possibility for partners to count on security assurances once those partners are not yet eligible for membership. Because NATO sometimes is not ready to come closer. NATO sometimes is taking a position of watcher, observer. That's it. They watch, they observe, and they want you, a partner, to make a statement, which obviously will cause you, once you are not supported by the other side, many political tricky frictions and problems. So that is the point where I think we could work on a non-member status for guarantees of security, a non-member guarantees for stability and commitment by NATO to a partner's destiny. Because so far, relations between NATO and partner are formed and shaped by partnership framework document signed by Azerbaijan, for example, on May 4th, 1994. But developed, this concept could bring us towards a new quality of relations between a partner and a bloc. And that would put in front of us new tasks and challenges, but first of all, that would open up new horizons. There are a variety of issues in IPAP. We talk about this in large extent with our partners in the United States. But basically, the strategic concept, the outline of NATO's approach to South Caucasus and Central Asia still is not solid, still is not articulated well. Issues of energy security. And am I in time still? Am I in time? A few more minutes, okay. I can go for long. Be aware of that. The issue of energy security, and energy security also is a matter which is based on achievements already, but also exacting further efforts to improve and to increase the achievements. And that, of course, takes us to the issue of additional opportunities for transportation of oil from Kazakhstan and gas from Turkmenistan through Azerbaijan, Georgia, to European markets. After Georgia, I will not go into geographic details because there are some options. Kazakhi oil probably can be taken more effectively through BTC, filling in additional, using that additional vacant capacity vacant there. But as for Turkmeni gas, I think that that's my personal opinion. There are three options, and one can be more preferable, two others can be less feasible, but I think there is a huge interest on the side of the international community, and European Union and both United States are supporting the idea, and I hope that energy security will be taken up very soon. Transport security. And transport security also is based on multiplicity, and multiplicity would also dictate development of different routes linking countries in the region and putting them in a transitional, trans-regional scale. So some concerns with current situation are obviously related to the same well-known heroes and actors of security drama in the South Caucasus. These are arms sales, these are gas arms deals of some countries there. These are increased violations of water spaces and airspace of Azerbaijan. These are some concerns with regard to proliferation and trafficking of different kinds. And these are issues which are to be handled practically and to be considered at a political level. And once there is a will, certain measures shall be undertaken. Well, I have gone through many of issues, but I think it's better to give at least limited, due to my not very disciplined behavior, time for questions, I believe.
Not at all. Thank you to the speaker for quite elegant eloquent, elegant and eloquent and extremely far-reaching.
Not that inelegant, right?
Far-reaching comments. And in particular for, I could say we appreciated the clarifications regarding the issues surrounding Nagorno-Karabakh and the referendum, Kalbajar, the corridor, and the sequence of negotiations. I'm going to take the privilege of the chair to ask the first question, which I anticipate may be the major question on Karabakh, and then be happy to open up for discussion. If we were talking about the justice and the righteousness of a position, I think few would deny that what you're suggesting regarding the return of Kalbajar, the corridor, these issues, that Azerbaijan, few would deny that Azerbaijan is correct in its position. What I am concerned about, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on the matter, is the natural Armenian response that is given when we discuss the return of Kalbajar before final status is discussed, even the proposal that you've raised regarding the corridor that would, in effect, connect Nakhichevan to mainland Azerbaijan straight through Karabakh. If I've understood you correctly, the Armenian response is usually, how can Azerbaijan guarantee not only the security of the Armenians of Nagorno-Karabakh, but guarantee that they will give the population of Nagorno-Karabakh, including the Azerbaijani returnees, the right to a free and democratic development within Azerbaijan, but on the basis of local government, not just persuade and convince, but how will Azerbaijan be able to guarantee both physical and political security?
Well, no one will be able or will be in a position to answer to this question before practically matters are started. There is not a question of how, but there is a question of when. And let's simply start the process. And the confidence between the parties cannot be appeared in advance, ahead of events, ahead of practical cooperation. Whatever Azerbaijan is suggesting, of course, might be rejected by the other side. But we are living within the world of opportunities and missed opportunities. And let's not to have this opportunity missed. Because the increased tensions coming around because of prolonged process of missed opportunities and unjustified resultlessness of the process will take us in a very undesirable direction. I am not threatening anyone, but I think that we should not furthermore risk to play within this way. The communities, not community. Your question, again, is circling around one community. But is it democratic to completely destroy the other one or to completely eliminate such a notion out of political map, out of negotiations? There is a community which used to live in NK region, Azerbaijanis. And they have to return back to their native towns and places. So that would be a real democratic approach. We all have been a part of one whole that was former Soviet Union, and there were problems within those limits of so-called Soviet democracy. Of course, Armenians may create somewhat a notion of a suffering side. But I will not go into that details, just to tell that NK region inside Azerbaijani Soviet Socialist Republic was one of most well-provided and supplied regions. So it's not exactly the basis against which we have to consider current and, more important, future. The future will be built up together. This is not a hypothetic. This is actually a concrete invitation to joint build-up efforts. And those two communities in NK region will be equally and mutually guaranteed. On the other hand, this is the way how we build up the whole process. As I said, there is a middle ground. Middle ground is composed of two things. Territorial integrity is not challenged. The freedom of self-rule is not limited. And therefore, within this pattern of approach, I think there are a lot of flexibilities, a lot of opportunities for both sides, both communities of NK region.
The floor is open for questions. Please identify yourself, Wayne, and use the mics. Thanks.
Wayne Murray, the American Foreign Policy Council. We now have another sort of private initiative on Karabakh from the so-called Dartmouth Group on the table in the last few days, which joins one from International Crisis Group from a few months ago. In my reading of them, I get something of a sense of deja vu from my own relationship with the Minsk Group in years past. But I'm wondering if you would comment on the Azeri view of those two private initiatives.
Well, I think that it would be a bit difficult for me to talk about the second initiative, which I'm not actually well aware of. As you said, that has appeared a few days ago, and I've been quite busy a few days, and I've been out of town. As for the ICG report, where they have contained some elements, that was a combination of heard, misheard, understood, and misunderstood things. I am not questioning or, God save, judging upon the quality of experts of ICG, but I believe that it's quite a risky exercise to take a courage of judging on a situation just it's in such a blitzkrieg way, coming in, listening to some picked-up people inside town, and then making a drawing a plan for all the 15-year-old prolonged process of settlement. That would be a bit risky. As for some elements there, I would say those are obviously present in the format of negotiations. We are considering those. But again, we are not basing ourselves on these conclusions or this assistance. Such an assistance, when it will be needed, it would be invited. Today, we do not think we need the engagement of NGOs so far. We are yet not at that position. Question on the other side.
Yeah, Bob Lawrence of Bob Lawrence and Associates. I want to commend you for being here and explaining in a detailed fashion the position that you have to this audience. I'd also like to point out that the Azeri position is entirely consistent with four resolutions of the Security Council of the United Nations, several resolutions in the Council of Europe and OSCE, and it is also entirely consistent with the three fundamental principles laid down and agreed to by the Minsk Group and OSCE for the framework of the negotiations. So I think you're to be commended for aligning yourselves with the world community, which you clearly have.
Well, just thank you. But I think that the position of international community could be sometimes more often articulated. And today we are somewhat locked in the very tight format of confidential talks within the co-chairman plus parties group. But when it comes a bit to an open stage, I hope that the international community will embark upon implementation of those measures envisaged by resolutions of UNSC 993, plus those rehabilitation needs of territories and providing guarantees for parties.
Shafak Mehrleva, Azertej News. Mr. Azimov, there's a well-stated position of American government that kind of echoes the vision of two other co-chair countries that year 2006 is the window opportunity for signing a peace deal between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and they believe that if this year is missed, there will be many more years before countries reach this kind of closure. Do you share this concern, or you feel like international community is rushing you into something? Rushing you into something.
The question of time and expediency and slow movement, and are we in time or are we in right place doing somewhat, is a calculation which always will decline us from the precise matter. So time should not dictate, time should not rule, but time should always give you an additional motivation. And I think that it's a concrete point when all sides may say that time is not working in interest of anyone. I think that continued process of settlement lacking results will not add to confidence, will not add to stability, and will not add to political and social comfort of citizens of both sides. Armenian population left the country, half of that, I believe, 1.5 million remained. As in the past it was 3 million, you may judge, simple arithmetics. Azerbaijani community is more bound to its own place, and Azerbaijanis stay in the country. And moreover, refugees and IDPs which came out from this conflict stay in Azerbaijan. Armenian refugees who left Azerbaijan are somewhere out. And that tells me that, yes, time is not working in favor of Armenia, because economic devastation and continued social desperate and hopelessness and feelings of this being deprived and denied is not quite a healthy background for progress. On the other hand, continued feeling of violation of its own rights, which accompanies Azerbaijani society and increases tensions and demands for settlement of conflict, for speeding up the process, and taking if simply speeding up is not giving concrete results, then taking more decisive measures. These demands are also somewhat adding to tensions, adding some urgency. And I hope that this is being shared by our mediators, my co-chairman.
I'd like to make sure we have an opportunity to ask our speaker questions on issues other than Karabakh.
Probably this one. I'm not lobbying him, but...
I'm Dr. Brandy, National Defense University, where I teach peacekeeping and nation building. Spent the last 8 months working with the Azeris and Arais especially. Looking forward to coming back again.
Thank you.
One question on Karabakh, because it's peacekeeping.
You were expected to... Okay.
I was going to say something else. But, you know, my understanding is not until all the agreements have been agreed to before we put a peacekeeping force on the ground. You know, why wouldn't we not put a peacekeeping force on the ground to create stability and security, start the economic revitalization, start the reintegration of both the IDPs and the Armenians who won't come back? Then we can work through all these other issues. Has anybody ever thought about that?
Short answer, yes. peacekeeping, as I said earlier, is an important guarantee, one of elements of the package, which is actually called to provide that guarantees which will give additional confidence and will take off arguments of the opposite side on security concerns and therefore necessity to keep territories in hostage position. So peacekeepers in place will mean security for both parties and will mean more eased process of withdrawals. And peacekeepers always are not only a matter of practice, it's a matter of political substance as well, as you see. And some would be of rather limited and short-sighted approach if they take peacekeeping as simply an operation of military character. Many countries are going into peacekeeping business for increased political activities for the sake of increasing political influences and authorities in international organizations and in that specific regions. And of course, this region I might assure you that is one of most specifically high interest. It magnetizes interest of many, and peacekeeping is a good sphere, is a good place within which these countries may apply their efforts. But there is an agreement between parties and co-chairmen that forces will not be provided by co-chairman countries. And maybe you can be sorry for that, but I'm really not, because of specific concerns of Azerbaijan. And forces will not be provided by regional countries. This was a result of position of the other side. The composition of peacekeeping force will be still to decide in within further process of negotiations. But already a flag was raised, and in some non-official discussions and negotiations, we consider such offers. And I must tell you that some European nations have been already registered with their suggestions, with their offers. We are looking for a framework. Such a framework has been established in 1994. That was a Budapest-placed OSCE summit-sponsored decision on establishment of peacekeeping operation for NK conflict zone. And part of that, HLPG has been established, which is a high-level planning group, busy and tasked with elaboration of operation plans. But besides, there are other options, and I think United Nations will also show continuously growing, increased interest towards this task. And I am not here in a position to exclude any other option. But I can tell so far, legally, there is a decision by OSCE in 1994 to establish a peacekeeping operation there. Up to you. You go.
Other issues, and then we'll get back.
I'm in hand of ambassador as well. Do we have time yet? Okay. We have time.
Okay. I'll do Adil and then Emil. Both sides.
Mike?
Two quick questions. One, if you could elaborate on the partnership with NATO on where the IPAP is, what's the next stage, and in general, where is Azerbaijan going with that? And number two, on the Kars-Ahalkalaki and further on railway, what's the status on that? When do you think the construction or refurbishment actually will begin, and when it's going to be completed? Thank you.
Thanks. Well, with IPAP, as I said, IPAP has been developed and has been supported not less to the thanks to the initiative and proposals given by Azerbaijan yet 3 years ago. IPAP has been immediately taken up as an initiative by Azerbaijani authorities, and we joined IPAP in 2005. Recently, just last week, I've been in Brussels headquarters of NATO, and we had a successful meeting of NATO plus Azerbaijan on assessment of first cycle of implementation of IPAP. I must tell you that I felt myself very positively satisfied with the way and reactions and the way partners in NATO assessed Azerbaijan's IPAP implementation. The IPAP of Azerbaijan, composed of four major chapters, one of which is administrational and deals with information processes and procedures and somewhat security procedures in exchange of information, but three others are more of substance dealing with directly political, security, economic reforms of Azerbaijan. There are a number of commitments inside these chapters considered and drafted by Azerbaijani government and relevant structures together with international staff of NATO. Those elements are also a part of Azerbaijan's inside state reform program. So we are doing IPAP in close conjunction with internal reforms. IPAP is not considered as an external element of our foreign policy activity. It's a part of our internal activities. and it is aimed and called to increase the effectiveness of security sector through reform, through better planning, through establishment of better management tools, through increased training and education of personnel, through some assistance programs raised and supported by NATO countries, and through equipping program also is important because you can't do anything without instrument, so you need that. Next item in our agenda with NATO probably will be continued implementation of IPAP, but IPAP is a framework. You can put in whatever you want and whatever is subject to an agreement by NATO side, and if you consider something as feasible or necessary to do, you can add it. And that is a part of our continued exercise through dialogue with NATO. And very soon, Bob Simmons, the high-level official of NATO, Deputy Assistant Secretary General for Political Affairs, and he is also Special Representative of NATO, Sec General for South Caucasus and Central Asia, will visit Azerbaijan. And we shall continue this dialogue with him on how to improve IPAP and how to increase the substance. And we have some plans, we have some ideas there. Regarding the Karsa-Halkalaki, yeah, but about IPAP, as I said, IPAP is a practical tool which simply increases your preparedness, provides your betterment in terms of compatibility and interoperability, and also provides your internal procedural effectiveness. But at the same time, IPAP's presence serves to the better political unity of Azerbaijan and NATO, and therefore political position, which I expressed earlier, continues to somewhat occupy minds of both Azerbaijani representatives and NATO representatives as we get in closer to NATO summit in Riga. And we expect, besides some considerations for potential invitations of some countries for membership, action plan, which is MAP, which is another program, another from IPAP. We also envisage somewhat specific arrangements for IPAP members, continuously providing the growing aspirations to better interoperability. So some signals, some messages are given, and some expectations are being raised with regard to Riga summit in terms of giving more security commitment to partner nations, more security assurances to partner nations. Regarding the Kars-Halkalaki road, exactly now it's not my business, it's business of Ministry of Transport. I think the project has been given already a political boost. I know that it was supported widely by UN, by OSCE, by European Union, by communities on different forums. Last time in so-called preparatory meeting for transport conference of OSCE, which was held in Baku, countries and secretariat of OSCE rendered support to this project, saying that this is one of most rare opportunities to increase the portfolio of transport routes in the Caucasus and through the Caucasus. Kars-Halkalaki should not be considered as something aimed against someone. It's a project of three countries. It's a project which was well expected a long time ago. It is sponsored extremely by their own national resources. We are not begging for anyone's support. We are not begging for anyone's financial support. We do our job to increase and to improve transport communications between countries, and we don't care anyone is concerned with that. It is not a part of pressures, as someone would like to speculate about. It's not an element of a conspiracy plot of anyone against anyone. Anyone else?
Why don't we capture a few final questions?
Hello, Montana. You're not going to avoid my question. It was a joy hearing you speak. It was almost, sort of gravitated towards Quebec and Canada arguments. A very civil, very polite approach, something inconsistent in terms of Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, something inconsistent with, say, your president's comments, say, with your mass media approach to this problem. The question is not going to be about Karabakh, I guess. It's going to be about your personal approach to doing something like this, to try to present a bad product as a good one. Who do you consider your personal, I don't know, teachers in that sense, maybe the national leader of Azerbaijan, late Haider Aliyev, maybe somebody else? How do you build this sort of snow job, as Tom Goltz would put it?
You know, Thomas, I'm sorry. A power of language of Thomas Goltz is, first of all, unmatchable and probably uncontestable, but in his own hands. So be careful of using his phraseology. What you have qualified as a difference between my statements and maybe statements of our leadership, I wouldn't see there such a difference. Because, sorry, too much talk for today. Because, first of all, our president of the Republic, never spoke in exclusive terms about what makes you so much concerned. The statements have been given so far in favor of settlement of conflict, soonest and peaceful. And you should read the press in full, or you should not try to see a cat in a dark room when especially there is no such a cat. On the other hand, it is not an attempt on my side to somewhat diminish the tensed sense of feeling in Azerbaijan's leadership. Yes, leadership is not satisfied with a protracted process of negotiations which give no result. And yes, a president is very decisive about leading the nation and about building up his country. Thanks God, or thanks plus to Azerbaijan nation itself, we had and we have additional and enough resources to build up ourselves. So no one can deny this. On the other hand, we are not speculating with this. We're simply building the country, and we're simply telling that there are two options. One, continued protracted lack of results, and that will bring nothing good to anyone. The other option, let's make the process of settlement, and parties will simply benefit from that. And there are concrete signs and messages given by Azerbaijani president and by Azerbaijani other officials on this subject. Again, the principal position is, as I stated, settlement of conflict, respecting territorial integrity of Azerbaijan. Peaceful settlement is obviously a preference of Azerbaijani government, and we are committed to that. But efforts still are not exhausted, fortunately, I believe so. If and when, this is another subject, not simply to be discussed right now, because I think we have still to work with peaceful efforts. And I'm not going to look behind that curtain, what is there. Was it the second part of your question? Or did I manage the whole?
How do you build up... How did you get to speak this well? That's my question.
How did I get to speak this well?
Yeah.
In what terms?
In terms of public speaking.
You do speak very well, Alan.
Yeah, it's a compliment. There is.
I'm actually good, you know.
Yeah.
I'm goddamn good.
Natural.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're nearing the end of the session. I'd be happy to give you the privilege of selecting
there
some
questions.
There is
insisting. Yep. Thank you very much for your presentation. Alexander Melikishvili, Monterey Institute of International Studies. I have three questions to you. One, just really quickly. One that has to do with the lease for the Gabala radar installation. Can you...
If you can give the intention of the Azerbaijan leadership regarding whether it will be continued lease or not. And the second one has to do with the CAS-4 military plan that was tabled by Russian Federation for the Caspian Sea. And I know that Azerbaijan is a very active participant in the Caspian Guard initiative. So I would like to hear Azerbaijan leadership's position on the CAS-4. Thank you very much. Azerbaijan leadership's position on the Kosovo conflict. Thank you very much.
Okay, Kosovo, first to deal with easy things. Kosovo conflict is totally different from what you could think, somewhat linked with our conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia. So any speculations on potential parallels and precedents established by one settlement for another settlement are simply groundless, believe me. Kosovo settlement is ruled and actually led towards a conclusion, but presumably by political interests of a specific group of countries inside the region. Here, I hope we shall be more free in terms of this kind of influences, and we shall be more precisely containing ourselves in principles and norms and normality and objectivity. The thing about CAS-4 and Caspian Guard. Listen, this is another wrong, false speculation about parallels between two unparalleled and different things. Because Caspian Guard is a program or a set of programs which are aimed at increasing national capacities of Azerbaijan in its own national framework rendered by the United States. It has nothing to do with establishment of joint American-Azerbaijani forces, as someone would tell. It has nothing to do with providing American military presence in the Caspian, as someone would air here sometimes. And, of course, this is exactly a program aimed at creating capacities of Azerbaijani Navy, of Azerbaijani border forces, Navy, Maritime Brigade of Border Forces, and some other structures which have to deal with proliferation risks in the Caspian, which have to fight with those and prevent those from somewhat threatening Azerbaijan and other states around the Caspian. CASP-4 is yet an idea, a concept, a proposal given by Russian side. And by the way, a tricky thing that Russians are using an English word for naming their own initiative. They don't say Kaspisky Sili, they say CASP-4. Black Sea-4, something what has been established by Russia and Turkey jointly in the Black Sea. That was somewhat balanced by another program, which is Black Sea Harmony, and was closer to framework of NATO Partnership for Peace programs. Here it is a particularly separate, different thing, but our position to this is very, very careful. We have a strong reservation on establishing any joint forces on the Caspian Basin. We consider that we today have a lot of things to do in front of us to increase our own national capacities. And I don't believe CAS-4 has a future, actually. It is more or less geopolitical, let's say, effort of Russia to increase its heavy weight in the Caspian. But they are increasing their force. They have increased their navy in Astrakhan. They have created some new strongholds on the Caspian in other Russian towns on the shore. And this is not overlooked by Azerbaijan and by other interested partners. So Caspian 4 is somewhat not well-positioned in minds of Azerbaijan's political leadership. The Gabala station, well, we are yet ahead of events with this question because only 3 years ago, or somewhat 3 years or 4 years ago, we have signed an agreement which took Gabala for leasing for 10 years. So when we come closer to that, if we see each other, I will tell you what we're going to do with Gabala station. But basically, please take due account of such a law of life. Things get older. And Gabala station is getting older in its fashion, and its technical equipment needs to be renovated, and it is not really in, let's say, feasibility stage. Maybe some years after, it would be more difficult to use and to plan something with this station. So time is running, and station has served its function, its task. It passed its best part of the life, I think. Situation is changing. New technologies should come around. Modern stations will be established, not hopefully this time in Azerbaijan, because they should be mobile, and Russia will probably look for another opportunity in Northern Caucasus. But, of course, strategic position of Gabala station was chosen in 1975 specifically because of geography, and this so far has been considered by us seriously. But also, please, I want to let you know that it is not only Russia's interest in having Gabala functioning continuously. We were told that Americans also are interested in having Russia using this station because they get from time to time some portions of information from that. According to an agreement on sharing information within the ABC system, signed by Clinton and Boris Yeltsin in 1997. Additional information will be provided on request. Annie?
Thank you very much. The session, unfortunately, must come to a close. There are other people demanding Ambassador Azimov's attention. I appreciate the fact that you've joined us today. Thank you very much for the time you've given to us.